Dr. Dyer joins luminaries such as Dr. Deepak Chopra and Dr. Masaru Emoto. He was the author of Hidden Messages in Water as a part of our New Thought Speaker series this year, and Jack Canfield, who wrote the Chicken Soup series. This series is designed to bring progressive authors and speakers to the Atlanta community and right here in East Cobb. So we're delighted to welcome Dr. Dyer back as he introduces his new book, Inspiration, Your Ultimate Calling, which will be released next March. Dr. Dyer is a celebrated author, motivational speaker, and psychologist. He has published more than 10 best-selling books, including his current bestseller, The Power of Intention, which is available in the foyer. As you know, The Power of Intention has been widely featured on PBS, and many of you have probably been introduced to Dr. Dyer as a result of it. Dr. Dyer has appeared on many national programs, radio, television, including The Today Show, The Oprah Winfrey Show, and The Tonight Show. He's a prolific writer, but he doesn't spend all his time writing. He's the father of 8 children. He and his family live and work in Maui, Hawaii. Won't you give a warm Unity North welcome to Dr. Wayne Dyer?
Thank you. Thank you. Good afternoon. Such a beautiful day here in Atlanta. I am honored to be back. I've spent the last 7 or 8 months writing. I'll be sharing with you what that's been like. It's been just absolutely miraculous. I have some surprises for you today. I promise you it'll be one of the most, if not the most, inspirational afternoon you've ever spent. That's my commitment now at 1 o'clock. You tell me at 4 or so if I lived up to it. I also like to begin by expressing my gratitude to all of you for coming here and for my beautiful home on Maui. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I remember it every day. When people ask me what it's like to be famous, I say it has nothing to do with me. Someone else decided that your reputation is not located within yourself. It's located in others. So it's always nice to begin by expressing gratitude toward it. Back just a few months ago, I was touring for the PBS special. How many people have seen the Power of Intention special? Wow, so if I repeated that, you'd probably be a little pissed off, wouldn't you? If I were. I'll try not to do that. But there will be some references to it. I must say, though, I stand up here with a great deal of pride because back in 1999, when we were approached about doing a public television special, I was told by all of the people in Washington and New York, the executives at PBS, that they would let us give it a try if we wanted to. But the people of America were not going to be sending money in to support public television for a theme on spiritual awareness and higher consciousness. It just wasn't where the public sentiment really was. It was more on rock and roll and on music shows and different kinds of subject matter. They had already researched that. So they said that they would allow us to try it, but that they wouldn't be able to support it financially in any way. So we put up our own money, myself and Louise Hay, and we put out the show, and then that show did quite well. Those first two shows, and we did 2 additional shows, which did very nicely as well. There's a spiritual solution to every problem, and 10 secrets for success and inner peace, how to get what you really, really, really want, wisdom of the ages. Those were all shows. And then PBS changed their mind about whether they would allow us to do a show, and they sent a limo and a budget of $450,000, and we did The Power of Intention. And it's now 2005, and in 6 years, we have crossed the $100 million mark in raising money for public television. So, thank you. On the 10th of November, 2 months from today, we'll be recording a new show on inspiration, your ultimate calling. You're welcome to come. It's in San Francisco. It's on my website. You can go on there and find out, and if you want to be there for that taping, it's almost sold out. There'll be 3,000 people there. It's going to be a wonderful evening, but there are people who are crazy enough to get on a plane and fly out there just to be there for an event like that, and the chance that you meet be on television. That Power of Intention show, I think, has aired 13,000 times. In every single market in the United States, and it continues to air and continues to do well. So once again, I thank you, because if you didn't send in the money to support the work that we're doing, those shows wouldn't be on, and you'd be watching rock and roll, which isn't so bad either. Back in the 1960s, when I was a young man in graduate school, I used to listen to a group of kids who came over to the United States from a little town outside of London. It's called Liverpool. Four young boys dressed funny. And we all, of course, knew that it was just a fad, and they would just be a passing fancy. They really didn't have anything much to offer. Turns out, of course, they wrote some of the greatest songs ever written, and they had written a song that I didn't really understand the meaning to. It was called "Will You Still Want Me? Will You Still Love Me? What? When I'm 64, right?" And I used to think, what a silly song. No one should even be allowed to live that long. Anyway. But it turns out, if you're born in 1940, as I was, on the 10th of May, then 2004 rolls around, and guess what happens? That's what 64 looks like. So I couldn't be there with my children. I have 8 children, 6 daughters, and 2 sons. And I received a card in the mail from them to celebrate. I was speaking in North Carolina, and this is the card that they sent me on my 64th birthday. I thought I'd share it with you, because I thought when I opened it that I'd finally just reach them, you know, after all these years talking like this and having them come with me. Inside this birthday card is a very special message from God, which I thought was so nice. See you soon. Happy birthday. So, that's what happens. And let me just fill this with the subject of what I'd like to speak about here today is this idea of the difference between inspiration and motivation. But before I do, I think it's appropriate to say a few words about what has just happened here in the United States. We live in Florida. We have a home in Florida as well as on Maui, and so we live on the water. And we've seen hurricanes come and go. They're a part of what you live with when you live near the ocean in the southeast. But the perspective that I would like to share with you on this, and I'll share a little bit more about it a little bit later on with another wonderful, wonderful surprise that I have for you today. Is to see if you can take a look at this event and these kinds of events from the perspective of not feeling so helpless and not feeling so out of the loop and not feeling as if these kinds of horrible tragedies that show up in our planet. I read a book years ago called The Earth as a Cell, and the whole philosophy behind this book was that the Earth is, in resembling anything, if it resembles anything, more than anything else, it resembles like a single cell of your body, what a cell looks like. And a cell is impacted by all of the other cells around it and its connection to the whole. And a cell also is in a continuous state of expansion and contraction and shifting and in relationship to the whole. So that when you look, when you try to, it's almost as if you have to get back and say to yourself, all right, there's probably 1,000 people here today. And we have much more to say about what goes on in the cells in our body than we've ever given ourselves credit for. And you'll see that coming, becoming pretty clear as I speak about it here today. And when we think of ourselves as one cell in a body called humanity, also when we expand ourselves outwards, that we have much more of an opportunity to impact humanity than what we may think of ourselves as this little ego who is separate from everybody else, which is just an illusion. It's just the false self. It's just not who you are. You're not separate from anything or anyone, including this environment and everything that's taking place in this universe. And there's a sense of oneness that we have lost sight of when we took on this ego of ours and began to believe that who we are is what we have and what we do and what others think of us, and who we are is separate from everybody else, and who we are is even separate from what we would like to have in our world, what kind of a world we'd like to have, and who we are is separate from God. We've taken on this illusion, these beliefs that are really just, they're just false notions. So what I'd like to just offer to you, just for a few moments here this afternoon, is a look at the possibility that the kinds of things that we're seeing happening on our planet today related to water are possibly, and I'm just throwing it out there as a possibility. I believe it, and I know it to be true, but I know it's a little weird, and I want you to know that when I get a little weird, that's the nice thing about now being 65, you just don't give a damn anymore, you know, it's like... You know God's going to see you soon anyway, so hell, you might as well just, you know. So that when it gets a little weird, I'll point it out so that you don't think I don't know. That I'm sounding a little strange, perhaps. But I want to tell you how I look at this from a perspective of attempting to live my life at a place called God realization or cosmic consciousness or God consciousness, meaning that every thought and every action, every belief, every little thing, every dream, every meditation, everything about my life, I put in the context of, am I thinking like God thinks? Or am I not thinking like God thinks? And if I'm not, then I really need to be aware of that. And we came from... We all came from a place of God consciousness, of God awareness, and if there's one thing about it that we know for certain that it excludes no one. You know that some of us don't get to get some nitrogen and some do, and some of us don't get to have water. The rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. That we are all. None of us are excluded from God consciousness. It comes to all of us. And so if you just know that, and put it into context with what I just said, you have to know that any thought you have that excludes anyone or anything is not a thought of God consciousness. It's why when you study Power Versus Force, a book that I always bring with me to all of my talks, and offer them to people that are, you know, very reasonable, whatever it costs me, perhaps the most important and significant book I've read in the past 10 years, it says right in the cover, Wayne Dyer. I know him. He's got good. It's a book that you should all have in your home and something that you should read every day. How many have read it? How many are familiar with it? Who hasn't and would like to? Stand up. Can you catch this? There it is. Congratulations. Power Versus Force. You're next. Later. I'm going to throw myself to you. No, never mind. Only kidding. On Sky, I know. I'll behave myself. So in Power Versus Force, he talks about the hidden determinants of human behavior. And as I said, it's just a book that I think should be in your home. And you read slowly and carefully and digest it and look at it. And you can have so much fun with it. I've taught my family so many things from that book. Just about how to tell when somebody's telling the truth. Just through muscle testing and so on. You can do it. And I could bring someone up from the audience and do it, but it's way too much to get into today to do that. So you can just take my word for it. It's powerful and great stuff. And one of the things he does is calibrate. You can calibrate anything through muscle testing. And the theory behind it is that anything that is created by God can only react to truth with strength. And anything that is not created by God, which the only thing that isn't created by God that exists in the universe, is our belief that we're not part of God. Everything else is from God. So our egos, we came from a place of perfection, and we left God behind and started believing that we were something other than what we are. So we edged God out, which is what ego means, edging God out, E-G-O. And as we edged God out, we started believing in something other than what we came from. And this idea of exclusion and non-exclusion is really relevant. Because if you take a concept called organized religion and just say the words, organized religion, and have the thoughts, you use the body as an instrument of truth, and you ask it a question, and you allow only the body to respond, this perfect creation of God, which is what you are walking around in, and you want to have a body, a mind that's in balance with the perfect creation that your body is. And the reason your body gets out of balance is because your beliefs about who you are out of sync with who you really are. And when you get your thoughts back in sync with who you really are, where you really came from, this infinite soul that you are, this soul of love and kindness, what I call the seven faces of intention, when you are these things, then everything in your life gets back into balance as well, and the right people show up and the right events show up. And I'm suggesting that it's also true in the environment and in the world, as I'm getting to when I speak about this hurricane in a few moments. So that if you take a concept like organized religion and you muscle test it and put it on a scale between 0 and 1,000, with 1,000 representing Christ consciousness, which is perfect unity with God, the unitive, one of my quotes that I always like to bring out is from Aldous Huxley. The final end and purpose of every human being, if you want to know what you're here for, is the unitive knowledge of God's being. That is to be in unity. Interesting name for a church, Nancy. You might want to think about it. The unitive knowledge of God's being. That is to be in harmony with your Creator in all of your thoughts. Now you take a concept like organized religion, and you ask yourself, is it in unitive being with God? That is, does it exclude anyone, does it exclude anyone, or does it include everyone? And if it excludes anyone, it's not in harmony with God. And you find that the body being used as an instrument of truth, which you can all do at home, reacts in weakness and calibrates below 200, which 200 is the distinction between whether something strengthens you or something whether something weakens you. And 1,000 is Christ consciousness. 600 was Mother Teresa. 900 is maybe 27 people on the planet calibrating at that consciousness level who have what is called the gift of fish and loaves, the ability to have no time delay between their thoughts and what it is that they manifest into the world. So if you want to think, if you see hungry people, you think food, and food materializes. Even the least among you can do all that I have done, and even greater things. It's within each and every one of us to have this. 27 of us on the planet perhaps are at 900, two above 970 on the planet today. And according to Power versus Force, he says that if someone came to this earth today at cosmic consciousness, at Christ consciousness, pure Christ consciousness, which Patanjali defined it like this. He said, when you are steadfast in your abstention of thoughts of harm directed toward others. Now hear that again. When you are steadfast, that means you never slip. When you are steadfast in your abstention of thoughts of harm directed toward yourself and others, all living creatures will cease to feel fear in your presence. Okay. All living creatures, when you're there. You might get there for a second or two, or 5 or 15, but to imagine to be just at that level of consciousness, that, and it's possible. It's possible. It's my goal. It's what I really aspire to be able to do that without having to leave my body. Because we'll all do that when we leave it. But I'd like to do it and stick around and see what that's like. You know? So that you take a concept that says some of you get in and some of you don't. Some of you get to be, you know, in heaven, and some of you don't, and some of you are, and all you have to do is watch the shows on television, and you can just see the people being interviewed. You can see how we have ascribed ego consciousness ideas to God, which is impossible, because God can only be what God is, which is perfect oneness. So if God were even to acknowledge that which is in something called two-ness, then oneness, perfect oneness couldn't exist, could it? Think about that. If something that is called perfect oneness were to recognize two-ness, conflict, then perfect oneness could no longer exist. It would now have to be two-ness. So you're wasting your time when you try to talk to God from a perspective of excluding somebody else. Doesn't work. And I'll talk about that more at the end when I talk about, I think, how to communicate with God or Source in a way to get results. And the first thing you have to do is abolish the idea that God is a cosmic bellboy. You know, that is going to replace your lacks and heal your wounds. That which is perfect well-being doesn't recognize illness. That which is perfect abundance doesn't recognize shortages and lacks. Can't. If it did, then it wouldn't be perfect abundance, would it? So you have to come to it from a totally different perspective than you come to it. But I'm going to close with that so you don't leave early. You know, that's the good stuff. So now I'd like you to just contemplate this idea, the idea of what has just happened with this hurricane that has just come through our country and rendered the kind of destruction that we've all seen, is rather than seeing it from a perspective of what's wrong and how it shouldn't have happened, and especially to be removing yourself from the criticism of anybody, any place. And you probably know that I'm not the biggest fan of the people who are running things these days. If you've read any of my books, you probably know. But this is not a political thing. I mean, it's to me, it's an absurdity to be looking at anybody in Washington or any place else and leveling criticism. I always just think of, okay, you do it. right, you're right. I don't know how to do this. I've been here. You step in here, and you get the trucks down there that don't have any gasoline, and you get the troops in there in 150-mile-an-hour winds. Have them stand outside New Orleans in 150-mile-an-hour winds. Do you know if you were standing outside in a 170-mile-an-hour wind, which is what these winds were, that you couldn't breathe for 10 seconds? That in 10 seconds, your chest would be crushed. That's what a 170-mile-an-hour wind looks like to a human being. Crushed, just front to back, okay? It's like all of the negativity, all of the things that are wrong, it's like these disasters, these kinds of things that we call disasters. Someone asked me about it in an interview last night and said, why do you think these? I said, it seems to me it's the only way God can get our attention and teach us how to be godlike. I mean, we become so generous and so kind and so loving, and you know, I mean, they've generated more money than anything ever in the history of our country in the last 6 or 7 days. There are volunteers everywhere. There are white people saving black people. There are black people saving white people. It's like, is there anything else I can do? I'm getting in a car. We've got Hollywood stars getting in boats and pulling people out. I mean, it's the same happened to 9/11. But take a look at this. Take a look at this. The earth is 75% water. All right? 75% of the earth's surface is water. And if you were to do a composite of who you are and put you into a big squish machine and just squish you until you could just turn you into, guess what percentage of water you would be? 75%. Here's the container. Here's a whole bunch of little, here's some gristle, and here's some bones, and here's some hair. Some of us would have some hair in there. There'd be this pile of stuff over here would be 25% of who you are. And over here would be 75% of who you are is water. Amazing, isn't it, that it's exactly the same? Okay, now you heard the talk about Dr. Emoto, Messages from Water. You've probably seen the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? We know that if you take a container and you just put a word on it that has intention behind it, that if that intention is other than that of God consciousness, that it affects the crystallization of the water, the crystal formation of the water, when you freeze it cryogenically. You know that? Does everybody understand that? So that if you put the word hate on a piece of, I know it's weird, but you put a piece of tape, and underneath that piece of tape, you put the word hate, and you print it on the label, and then you take another, and they take the same water from the same lake, from the same source, and you put the word love on it, all right? And then you take both bottles of water and you put them in a cryogenic, which is minus 273 degrees centigrade. That's the coldest anything can get on this planet. And you cryogenically freeze it, and then you take a microscope and you take a picture of how the water crystallizes. You will see in the container that has hate written on the wood. It doesn't matter what language you use. They do it in Japanese, they do it in German. These posters are all over Japan. And if you open up, you see that movie. And you'll see when hate is on there, everything is distorted and everything is out of balance and everything looks ugly and it looks like it's all torn apart and like nothing that you would call beautiful. And then you take the same bottle of water that has the words love on it, and they have these magnificent, beautiful, perfect, symmetrical projections and drawings that look like drawings, these photographs, and it goes on all over the planet. They do this. Doesn't that, when that first, I read that, maybe 10 years ago, I was lecturing at a convention out in Las Vegas, and someone handed me this book, that Dr. Emoto's first book on the Messages from Water. And I took it with me wherever I went. I brought it home, if you remember, and I was showing it to them. I said, look, this is what happens when you, when you have intention, just one person's intention, what it does to crystallizing the water, okay? Now you're 75% water, the earth is 75% water. Now you get a population of people who have intentions that are out of balance. Do you think it's possible? I mean, if you look at what is a tsunami and what is a hurricane and what is a flood and what is a drought, what are these things that we call, and even earthquakes are about continental shifts, about water. When we are out of balance and consciousness is located in us, that's where consciousness is. There is consciousness in a rock, and there is consciousness in a frog, and there's awareness in a tree. But God consciousness, the ability to be able to shift and live at that consciousness and know it, and know that who we are as a people, and that's where it's located. So if consciousness is located in us, and our intentions collectively as a people are out of whack, out of balance, are filled with hatred, with anger, with fear, with worry, with these kinds of things that are being thrown at us 24 hours a day. I mean, it used to be that the bad news was something that you would get in the village. And if somebody had an accident or somebody died, or once in a while there'd be a crime and somebody would get hurt or killed or whatever, and you'd hear about it and that would be it. It would be rare once every 4 or 5 years. You know, that would be the best. Now, we have hordes of people whose purpose is to do nothing but go out and find bad news. And then to put it on the air on every channel that we can get, and there's 500 channels. And then on the channels, you've got people who are not only reporting the bad news, but they're blaming everybody else for the bad things that are happening, and they're fighting amongst each other, saying as many negative and hateful things as they possibly can. And we fill our lives with this kind of information that used to be just an occasional thing. You know, Einstein said the most important decision that you'll ever make is to decide whether you live in a friendly universe or a hostile universe. And if you live in a hostile universe, and that's your belief system, it's not mine. I don't believe that for a second. I don't believe what happened down in New Orleans and what happened in the tsunamis and all of that. I don't believe that this is bad news. This is just the function of a cell that is out of balance, that is contracting and expanding, that we can do something about to make it shift. We can do it. Read Valerie Hunt's Infinite Mind. Understand that we can impact our environment. We can make hurricanes go away, and we can make them be less destructive. They can be moved. They're big, so you don't seed them with a 747. I heard someone suggest it. We just take a 747 and seed it. I said, but it's 250 miles across. A 747 is like this stage, you know. It's not about that. It's about consciousness. It's about consciousness. And especially, it's an awareness that water, which is the lifeblood of our planet, crystallizes as affected by our intentions, by the ways that we think. We have to really get that. So I urge you, as you look at this, to use this information and, of course, be as loving and generous and supportive. My family is. We're doing all that we can for it and more. But don't be a part of hating anything, because the problem isn't what you hate. The problem is hatred. Even if you hate war, you become a person who is more contributory towards more war taking place. As they said to Mother Teresa, will you march against the war in Vietnam in 1967? She said, no, I will not march against war. But if you have a march for peace, I'll be there. And there's a big difference in marching against something and being against something and putting your attention on what you're for. So that if we can collectively begin to see ourselves as all connected in this perfect oneness in all of our thoughts. So we imagine now calibrating something like organized religion and finding out that it weakens us, the concept itself weakens us, because it excludes some and includes others. It's not of God. But you take the same concept of suality, which is that which unites us, and anything that unites us strengthens us, and test it on your body, and your body all of a sudden gets very strong. So you just ask your body, just say the words while you're being muscle tested. Say the words organized religion and watch what happens, and then say the words spirituality and watch what happens. You go from weak to strong, from weak to strong. Your body can only react to truth because it's an instrument of God. It's this mind of ours that is starting to believe something else. So that's my take on the hurricane. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but it makes a lot of sense to me that we can do a whole lot more to get our earth back in balance by just changing our consciousness around and shifting to God realization. So for years, I have been labeled the father of motivation. I don't know why somebody gave me that label, and I'm already the father of eight. I just don't need to be the father of anything else. Thank you. It's a nice thought, but I'd like to really start out by speaking about the difference between motivation and inspiration. And I've been writing about inspiration. I started last December and I finished in April. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'd like to encourage you to do the same. I'm serious. I'm really serious about this. Really. I'd like you to think about this and just give, how many of you, by show of hands, just honestly, how many of you awaken sometime between 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning? Okay, so look around and notice this is almost everybody. Now, some of you who are my age just think, well, I got to go pee. It's my... These things happen. Your prostate grows. You got it. It'll go away. Whatever. Which doesn't have to happen, by the way. Doesn't have to happen. You don't have to let an old person move into your body. It's never going to happen to me. I just don't invite anybody in like that. It's true. So you awaken sometime between 3 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, this is a universal thing. This is a very, very common thing. Notice it. Start noticing when you awaken. Now, the first thing you do, of course, is you may get up, you may go to the bathroom, get right back into bed, or you may just look and say, oh, my God, I've got 6 more hours to sleep, or whatever it is, and are grateful for that, whatever. But I'd like you to think about a poet whose name was Jalaluddin Rumi, who lived in the 13th century, great Persian poet. And he said, the morning breeze has secrets to tell you. Do not go back to sleep. Do not go back to sleep. Do not go back to sleep. 3 times, it says in the poem. The morning breeze has secrets to tell you. If you could get yourself to this place where you could know that there are no accidents in this universe, so that an awakening time, of all of you who raised your hand who waken between 3 and 4 a.m., how many of you awaken at the exact same moment virtually every day? 3:03, 3:27, 3:33, whatever it is. What is your time? 3:30. What is yours? 3:13. 3:45. 4:01. You're too late. I've already blown it. But you notice when you say these numbers, I mean, you say them with such certainty, don't you? That it's like you wake up and you go, oh my God, there it is again. Out of a deep sleep, I'm suddenly awakened at this time. And for those of you who aren't participating here or don't, it's not because you're not participating, it's because you just haven't become conscious that this is happening to you as well. That there's a wake-up call. And there's a morning breeze that has secrets to tell you. And that morning breeze is beckoning you to awaken and allow the reason that you're here to become manifest. Because it's the time of the day when the earth where you are is most like God. It's quiet. Everyone else is asleep. The Tao is calling you. It's the space between the bars. It's the silence between the notes that makes the music. That's where the music comes from. You talk to any composer, and they will tell you it isn't the noise. It's what it comes from that allows the music to come. It's the silence between the notes that makes the music. It's no music. But as soon as you have a break, as soon as you put a stop in there of any kind, that stop, that silence, is what allows the next note to shift. And without that, you have the oneness. You have the non-musical musicality, if you will. So it's like you're being awakened to something. So I practiced this for 6 months or so in writing Inspiration. And in the writing of Inspiration, I found that what I did is I create what we call a puja table, which is a place where you put everything on this table that has any significance to you of high energy. All right? So if it's a picture, like I never speak without Sai Baba with me. It's just he's the 973. He's one of those people with the gift of fish and loaves, and he comes to me and awakens me and directs me. So I have that there, and I have a statue of Saint Francis that I had carved for me when I was in Assisi, writing Spiritual Solution to Every Problem. And I have pictures of I have a picture of an 8x10 picture of Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. You know, I used to have my kids there, but they got ugly. I don't know what happened, but I can't. And I have things that people have sent me and various books and so on. And the interesting thing is that I take, if I know that I'm writing a book about inspiration, I have the book there completed in front of me, because I think it's really important for you to... if you want to understand inspiration, to learn to think from the end, to get to a place where you are acting as if what you would like to attract into your life is already here. And so I put inspiration on a piece of paper and I make it, wrap it around another book and I put it there, and it's like, there it is, it's completed, even though I haven't written a word yet. And I watch that and I see that and I note it there and I act as if it's already completed, and I have the words up there. Anyway, there's 40 or 50 of these things. Now, all of these things have energy, because everything in the universe has energy in it. I recommend to you, if you'd like to lose weight, that you take a bathing suit that you would like to perfectly fit into, and just put it right on the wall. Literally, just top and bottom, okay? Or just bottom, if you prefer, or just top, whatever is your preference. And just nothing more. You don't have to do anything else. You don't have to diet. You don't have to exercise. You don't have to do anything else. You just have to have that thing that you're going to step into there. And all of a sudden, you shift into an awareness level that is what I call inspiration, where you move into spirit, because you came from a place of perfect well-being. You know, there's no Jenny Craigs in heaven. I mean, I guess there is, but there's nobody comes into this world in anything other than well-being. That may be hard for you, some of you, when you think about babies and all of that, but truly, it's about well-being. And all of the stuff that we call disease, and all of the stuff that we call obesity, and all of the stuff that we call hunger, and all of these kinds of things have come about because we've edged God out. We've taken on an ego individually, collectively. There's no blame. It's useless to have any blame. But there is this sense that you have to begin to see yourself as what you came from. As you'll hear me talk later, it's like the way to communicate with Source is not by learning something new, but by remembering. In A Course in Miracles, it says, the memory of God comes to the quiet mind. It cannot come where there is conflict. A mind at war with itself, listen to this, a mind at war with itself remembers not eternal gentleness. And eternal gentleness is where you came from. Eternal perfection is where you came from. This is in all your thoughts, all of your actions, what you eat, how you exercise, how you think, everything. When you get, and it's like, it's really, you'll see when you start talking to the people who achieve at the very, very highest levels, the highest level, Bill Russell, you all know who Bill Russell is, the greatest rebounder in the history of basketball, right? I think won 11 national championships. Everybody tries to, you know, emulate Michael Jordan, but I mean, this guy's like 11 in a row or something. He said, I got 95% of my rebounds before the guy shot the ball. It's like, he could see. I had breakfast with Wayne Gretzky one morning on Maui, and I kept pushing him, what makes you the greatest? Because when I grew up, Gordie Howe was going to, this is hockey, it's a game. They used to play it. It's like, they got a little greedy and all of that, but they're coming back. And I kept pushing him, like, how does someone like you? He's like, he was basically a wuss. I mean, his wife was pushing him around, telling him what to do. He was a little guy, skinny little guy out of Ontario, and I kept pushing, and I was like, how do you get to be the guy, the greatest player in the history of the game? All the records that Gordie Howe took 30 years or 40 years, he played in five different decades, for God's sake, professional hockey, and this guy comes in 11 years, breaks every record that Howe ever set. And finally, he said, I think I know what you're getting at. First, he said, I go to practice, and I said, more than that. Who in the National Hockey League doesn't go to practice? Finally, he said, I think I know what you're getting at. He said, when I'm on the ice and I shoot the puck, I can see it going into the net before I shoot the ball. I actually can see it when I score a goal before I shoot. Now that is a symbol of what I'm talking about moving into inspiration in your life, moving into spirit, where you... It's a remembering process, but it's like getting out in front of your life and seeing it coming and knowing that you have the power, just like we collectively know that we can have the power to stop these kinds of violent displays of water reacting to our sense of imbalance as a species, as a people who have... You know, I mean, we've got enough nuclear weapons stored in silos and in airplanes and in submarines to wipe out all of Earth on the planet. Why have we done this? Why have we created such a scenario? Don't you think that we're out of balance when we've done something? It's like, do you hate anybody in Russia? Some commie grandmother that pisses you off who's just like, you know? Nobody's ever said they hate anybody in Russia. And nobody in Russia hates anybody. And yet we've got all of this stuff aimed at wiping out the... And we're having babies. And I'm having grandchildren. I mean, these little kids. I've got now a fifth grandchild on the way. And it's like, this is what we're doing for these little tiny things? We're saying, okay, here's the earth that we're going to hand you. You know, guess what? If somebody gets a hold of that red button over here, it's like, you know... That kind of stuff can be changed around and shifted. So if motivation is you get a hold of an idea and take it to its logical conclusion and don't allow anybody to interfere with that desire, which is what we call motivation, so that we tell our children, get motivated. We want, you know, and they call me this motivator. I can't motivate anyone. I really don't believe that I can. So if motivation is your ego gets a hold of an idea and says, no one's going to stop me from this. I'm going to work hard at it. I'm going to set goals. I'm going to make this happen. That's what we call motivation. Inspiration is the reverse. Inspiration is an idea gets a hold of you. And it takes you where you were destined to go when you signed up to get here in the first place. That's what inspiration is. An idea gets a hold of you. Arthur Miller, the great playwright, all of you probably had to read one of his plays in high school or college at some time. Death of a Salesman, The Crucible. When they ask him, are you working on another play? He was 88 years old. He just died last year. They ask him at 88, he had a play on Broadway, are you working on another play? He said, this is a great answer. I don't know. But I probably am. Now that says it all. I don't know, but I probably am. Meaning that there is a part of me, there is something that is bigger than my life that I haven't allowed, it has just taken over. And it is the controlling influence in my life. Listen to this is a Mozart's biographer. It seems a would-be composer came to Mozart asking his advice. He asked the question, how do I write symphonies? Mozart replied, well, you're young yet. I think you should begin by composing minuets. The young man was greatly annoyed and exclaimed, but you were writing symphonies when you were 9 years old. Yes, Mozart responded, but I never ask anyone how to do it. Now, listen to what he says further. The most agonizing thing about this little Mozart story is that Mozart was not speaking from inflation, but from simple and truthful modesty. The reason Mozart, now listen, this is really relevant. The reason Mozart didn't have to ask anyone how to write symphonies is that symphonies presented themselves to him, invented, enlarged, produced all at once in what he described as lively dreams. Dreams that were so forceful that Mozart had to stop what he was otherwise doing and write out what he heard, almost as if something beyond Mozart's consciousness desired these symphonies to be written. You're no different than Mozart. None of you are, except in your belief that you don't have those same kinds of abilities. That when an idea presents itself to you, those of you who have read my little book that I wrote, this book actually for my teenage children, but it's really a book for adults. I mean, it was a whole PBS special, 10 Secrets for Success and Inner Peace. And I've talked about some of them already. The 10th secret in here is wisdom is avoiding all thoughts which weaken you. So you have to know what thought weakens you and what thoughts don't. A thought that weakens you is a thought that is not of spirit, because inspiration means in spirit. And it's all about remembering. It's just remembering your spirit, getting back to this place in every thought, in every action that you have. And the second secret in here is called don't die with your music still in you. And you came here from an invisible place, as we all did. Everything that originates, it's the spirit, Jesus said, it's the spirit that gives life. The flesh counts for nothing. It's the spirit that gives life. We know for certain that particles do not create particles. That when we study, that was Einstein's great contribution. I was the recipient this past year, last October, of what is called the Einstein Award at Yeshiva University at the Einstein School of Medicine up in New York. And they gave me this award. I was the first non-medical person to get this. And this award is given to the person who exemplifies the teachings of Einstein, the philanthropic teachings of Einstein, not so much the scientific. And so I went there to receive this award, And I went to lecture them on Einstein's theory of relativity, because most people don't understand it. And I thought, well, I'll just explain it for them. Really? You were there? Yeah. So I got all of these psychiatrists and psychologists and medical doctors, and they were all there, and I came out and explained Einstein's theory of relativity, which is, Nietzsche tried to explain it, the German philosopher. He said, all things being relative, what time does Munich stop at this train? See, that's the way it went over.